turned 21 in prison doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried, Mama tried, Mama tried.
Welcome to Success Made for Last. I'm Tim Moore. This is the podcast that helps you live the best version of you, where we interview people who live lives of excellence. Brought to you by Blinkist, where you'll find thousands of nonfiction books condensed to 15 minutes, so you can test drive them or just browse them for the key ideas. That's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Today, folks, we have with us Marty Taggart, the oldest son of one of country music's, and for that matter, all of popular music's all-time greatest, Merle Haggard. I won't list all of Merle's accomplishments and awards. I'll let Marty do that. But here is a sample. Merle was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 94, the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame in 77, was awarded a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2006, and a Kennedy Center Lifetime Achievement Award in 2010. But let's hear more from Marty about his legendary dad. Marty, thanks for coming on today.
It is absolutely my pleasure. I have never been mentioned in the same statement as excellence, but I appreciate it.
Well, I saw you in concert, and it was pretty excellent. By the way, I understand today is your birthday, so happy birthday if I'm correct about that.
It is.
Well, happy birthday, Marty.
Thank you, brother.
I won't ask you which one, but
I'm 62, so that's okay.
Well, you're younger than I am, Marty. How did we get this old?
How'd I get this old? Pure grace.
Yeah, how'd that happen, huh? Well, Marty, at the beginning of your concerts honoring Merle, you tell the audience all about the hits, the number one singles, and the other accomplishments that made Merle perhaps the greatest entertainer ever. Do that bit for our audience today, Marty, because it was very enjoyable to hear on stage.
Well, you know, Dad was an icon. He wasn't just a country music singer. You know, if he had been nothing but a country music singer, he would have been considered a great. But Dad's influence in the music world and the entertainment industry, just the American culture in general, world culture for that matter, it superseded country music. I know for a fact that there's so many people in other genres of music that grew up that Dad influenced, that, you know, people like, you know, Creedence Clearwater Revival, John Fogerty, Dad was his favorite singer, and Rolling Stones, the Beatles, Elvis Presley, and it goes on and on and on. And Dad had he had more than just an effect on the country music crowd. It was the world. And but you know, Kris Kristofferson used to call my dad the poet of the, or actually he called him the master of simplicity, and the poet of the common man. Mm. And you know, what Dad proved is, if it's country, rock and roll, or whatever, I don't personally like to call anything by a brand. I just like to say, is it good or bad? And when it comes to music, Dad was as good as music could be. He was honest, and he told his life in a song, and as a result, it probably told everybody else's life in a song also. And you know, his accomplishments are actually longer than either one of us could. We ain't got enough time to get into the details of everything he's ever done, but he had more top 10 records than anybody in music history, 110 of them. And, you know, and not a bum in the lot. Every single song was so good. And probably what made Dad's life or music so great, I think, was partially where he came from to get to where he ended up. And, you know, he was, I was born when he was put in San Quentin prison doing time, doing 1 to 15 years as a 19-year-old kid, and on the wrong road of life. And it was in San Quentin prison that he met an old convict that was doing life. The old man was never going to be free. And the old man was the one that told Dad what a gift he had for music and what a waste of life he was wasting, and encouraged him to straighten up and get out of San Quentin and pursue a life through music. And Dad took the old man's advice, and he was released from San Quentin in 1960. 2 years and 9 months after they put him in, and he came out of San Quentin as a 21, 22-year-old kid and went to work in trying to make his a life in music, and went on to rewrite the record books. And I always tell, if I wrote a book about my dad's life, it would have to be actually a book about America and the power of freedom, what a man can do in a country that allows you the freedom to correct your ship. And, you know, in 1972, my dad was asked by the astronauts, that the last trip that we made to the moon, he was asked by those astronauts to cut a custom album for those boys that were headed to the moon. He did. He made that album for those boys. He had made friends with some of them, and they took this album. They listened to it all the way up to the moon, and when they got there, they tied that album to the flag, the American flag that's stuck in the moon as we speak. And so put it in a very quick, put that in perspective. In America, you can go from San Quentin to the moon if you had the want to.
Yes, it's true, isn't it? Despite what people would like us to believe sometimes.
Yeah.
Marty, you were named after a hero of your dad's, Marty Robbins. Who else were some of the musical heroes of your father when he was growing up?
Well, Dad grew up loving a lot of different artists. Probably his two primary influences, well, let's say three. Two, Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. Bob was the king,
yes,
king of Western swing from 1930s to the 1960s, and Dad and the old man, Dad grew up loving Bob Wills, and he probably influenced Dad's music as much as anybody. But Lefty Frizzell was a major influence in his vocals, and but he also loved Wynn Stewart, and Dad loved Bing Crosby too. And Dad and I used to talk about it a lot, and his influence and appreciation for other singers was actually very widespread. He but Lefty was probably his first real influence as a kid growing up, and they had similar timbres in their voice and whatever. But honestly, if any, Dad just loved anybody that sang from their heart. He loved Elvis. Who didn't? And but Lefty and Bob Wills were probably the first two that influenced his career.
Interesting. My dad was born and raised in southeast Oklahoma. He tells me he still remembers Bob Will when he was a kid coming through with his band someplace. You know, I don't remember where, but he was iconic in and of himself, wasn't he?
Oh, my goodness. You kidding me? He was the cat daddy of that period of time in history. And, it's a brand of music that don't get heard much anymore, which is sad because, you know, it's kind of a country, I guess, a countryer version of the old big band swing stuff. And, if I was stuck on an island somewhere and I only had one choice of a certain kind of music I could listen to while I was stuck on that island, I would probably pick Western swing.
Wow, isn't that something?
It don't get old. You know, it's different, it's refreshing, and it makes you smile.
Yes, that's true. That's a very good point. It does make you smile. Well, it was dance music, wasn't it?
Yeah, you could dance all by yourself with that stuff. Yeah, and that's what music is. It's a gift. You know, it's a gift from heaven, and it was sent to give us some joy, some peace, and a little shelter in the storms of life. And you know, every brand of any kind of music is wonderful. I personally love Irish music. You know, the old Celtic stuff is so cool, so soothing, and in fact, it's probably the beginnings of real American country music is the old Irish music. But yeah, there's just all music is so good, and it's hard to pick. It's like trying to pick my dad's favorite song. They're all so doggone good. I hate to say, you know, try to pick one above the other.
Marty, Merle's family was from Oklahoma, although he was born in California, and you were 21 years later, and his family left Oklahoma in 1934 in that great Arky and Oki and Texas Dust Bowl migration as they fled abject poverty in Oklahoma to more poverty but a fighting chance in the Bakersfield area of California. Did Merle or your grandmother tell you stories of that trip from Oklahoma to California and growing up there? If so, tell us some that you might remember.
No, there was no stories of about the trip itself. I can say that the primary reason, by the way, that my Grandma Haggard and Grandpa Haggard moved from Oklahoma, the Dust Bowl was going on, and there was a lot of migration going out that way. But the primary reason that my grandma they moved out there was because of Grandma Haggard's health. She had had a she had had a baby that had died at birth, and but anyway, she had a real major health problem, and the doctors all advised that they move to a drier climate, and so it just coincidentally lined up with the Dust Bowl, and a lot of the folks in the Oklahoma, Arkansas, Kansas, Texas area were all migrating out there anyway. And that was the primary reason they went west, was because of my Grandma Haggard's health, and she needed a drier climate. And so my Grandma Haggard and Grandpa Haggard loaded up and moved out there, and, you know, ended up in Bakersfield, California.
When you read Merle's autobiography and listen to many of his songs, speaking of Grandma Haggard, you can hear his reverence for her. She seemed like probably like a tower of strength, like many women from that era. And I remember my grandmother was that way. My father's mother was that way.
Sure.
Talk about her life, her values, Marty. What was she like? I mean, those people were very different in many ways. They're very similar, but very different. They were hard-nosed people who just got by and didn't complain, right?
Yeah, good grief, they had no options, they had no choice. You know, everybody from that generation was just a little bit tougher than we are these days, that's for sure. But, you know, my Grandma Haggard raised us kids while Dad was in San Quentin prison. And, back before he got his life together, somebody had to keep us kids together until he got his life together. Well, Grandma Haggard was the one that did that. And Grandma and I were probably the closest of anybody in the family. And I don't know how to describe my Grandma Haggard. I'm sure maybe your mama was the same way or whatever, or Grandma. But my Grandma, she was the perfect mixture of class and humor and tough. And her particular foundation was built simply around Jesus. She believed in Jesus, and she believed in heaven. And, she was solid. In fact, I've always referred to my Grandma Haggard as Jesus in a skirt. I never thought I'd meet another woman like her in my life, but I finally did. I met her up in Arkansas, in Glenwood, Arkansas, and by God, I married her.
Well, that sounds like a good idea, Marty.
Yeah, I finally found my grandma just a little bit younger.
Well, you mentioned the fellow in prison who told Merle to get his act together, and Merle did. Not only did he write himself, but he got early parole, and as you said, he went out. He left prison in '60, and he started playing music down there in Bakersfield. And he and a guy named Buck Owens, you mentioned Wynn Stewart and some other guys, they started playing something called, later was called, the Bakersfield sound. And Marty, in your words, what made the Bakersfield sound so different, and why did it change the course of country rock and rock and roll?
Right. It was Keith Richards, who the lead guitar player for Rolling Stones. But Keith used to, he was a big fan of my dad's. In fact, they were really good friends, my dad and Keith. And somebody asked him that very question one day, what's the difference between, that California or Bakersfield sound and Nashville? He said, Nashville's kind of like country music with a tuxedo. He said, California, Bakersfield sound, he said, that was blue collar country, right? And I understand what he's talking about. It was almost like a really good garage band, It was just raw. It had mistakes, and it wasn't perfect and all this good. It just had life to it, kind of like the original Beatles records and Creedence Clearwater Revival and some of that old, I don't know, it just wasn't pretty, but it was just good.
Yeah, a lot of people were out there listening to that music and influenced a lot. I had no idea that Keith Richards was one of the people that, reached back. And now that you mention that, boy, you can hear that. You can hear that that rawness and that he took from your dad.
Yeah, and Dad had a mutual respect for their music because it was real raw. Like I said, it was a glorified garage band,
Yep. In 64, Merle records a Wynn Stewart song called Sing a Sad Song. It's a hit. Marty, Merle's on his way. Do you remember that? And well, you were probably only six, but do you remember that? And do you remember thinking, my God, my dad's on his way? Or were you just too young to have any memory of that?
I was too young to have any comprehension of the music world and celebrityism and all of that. I knew what Dad did for a living, but when Dad recorded that song from Wind, I was 5, maybe 6 years old, and Dad was actually playing bass in Wind's band. And in fact, we moved to Las Vegas when I was 6 years old for about a year. He was playing bass in Wind's band, and Wind became like a mentor to him, and Wynn was one of the great, I think, one of the most underrated country artists of all time. And but he took Dad under his wing, and probably, you know, that, when you listen to some of Dad's really, really early records, like Sing a Sad Song and that general early 60s period of stuff, you hear a whole lot of Wynn Stewart in his voice. And but Wynn Stewart had a great influence on Dad. And, in fact, when you walk on my dad's bus, and you look straight to your left, there's a portrait of Wynn Stewart on his bus. He was the only guy he had a picture of anybody else in the music business on his wall.
Really? You know, I don't know that much about Wynn Stewart, but those comments make me want to go back and listen then. Thank you, Marty.
Do that.
That's something.
Yeah, he had a couple songs that were hits, like They Call Me a Playboy and just a couple really good songs. Wynn was a great singer and a great songwriter, and he kind of fit. I think that Dad at least started out with Wynn Stewart in mind, and as time went by, it evolved into his own sound. But I think Wynn could probably be credited as much as anybody for the beginning part of my dad's career.
Well, thanks a lot. I'm going to go check that out because, as I said, I don't know much about him. So at some point, Marty, your father took you on the road with him, I guess during the summers or whatever. And when did that start, and for how long did it continue to take you on the road?
Well, I think my first trip, I was probably 8, maybe 9 years old. And I was a really low maintenance kid. I didn't talk. In fact, I didn't talk at all. I was real quiet. I didn't complain about nothing. I didn't ask. Heck, he had to every once in a while ask me, are you hungry? Because I would never even say I'm hungry. And I was a low-maintenance kid, and he'd take me on the road with him. And it actually got to the point where I was on the road with him as much as I was at home. And I was with him when he wrote and recorded pretty much everything he did through from about 66 on. And I spent as much time on the road with him as I did at home. And now I know I never finished high school. I never was in it.
I guess that kind of slows things down there, doesn't it, on the high school side, huh?
Yeah, I got my diploma out on the road, and I learned things they don't teach at the Harvard School of Business.
Yeah, well, that's, I'm telling you, you had to have met just about literally every country star of the era, right?
I've met them all. I became very close with a lot of the older guys, even more so than the guys from my generation when I was in the music business. And, you know, Johnny Cash was like a second dad to me. And, you know, but I've known everybody from Tex Ritter and Roy Rogers all the way up to Garth Brooks and Tim McGraw, everybody in between. Just, I've had a relationship with Farron Young was my friend, and the great Bill Anderson. I mean, it goes on. Marty Robbins, Conway Twitty, you name it. But yeah, back in those days of country music, the country artists used to do a lot of package shows. And in fact, they always did that. And so I got to know a lot of those country artists before I even knew anything about their music. I got to know them. And I really don't think about Johnny Cash when it comes to his music as much as I do him as a person. He was my friend. And same with Farron and Marty Robbins. I was an honorary pallbearer at Marty's funeral, so I knew him extremely well. And yeah, but because of Dad, I get to know everybody from his generation and before. And, like I said, because of my career starting in 79, I got to know everybody from that period on. And so I have a relationship with pretty much everybody in the country music industry, beginning to end.
Remarkable. Remarkable. Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned Bill Anderson, by the way. I interviewed him last week, and we air that podcast tomorrow. And the consummate gentleman. One that just seems like one of the nicest human beings on earth.
Well, what you think is not. Bill's probably even nicer than you think. He's I find him, he is a gentleman. And he was a friend for me when I hit a couple hard times in my life. And I can't really find enough words to describe my respect and admiration for Bill Anderson. He's a kind gentleman.
Yeah, when you watch his show, Country Family Reunion, you can see the respect and affection that everyone on that show has for him. It's in their eyes. It's in their face. He's like the best uncle that anybody in that room ever had, isn't he?
Yeah, nobody's a stranger to Bill. And he treats everybody as if they're the only person in the world. And, you know, I've done the Country Music Reunion show with him. And, you know, Bill, you know, there's not enough words to describe. Everybody that knows Bill Anderson believes that they're the only friend Bill Anderson's got.
You know, I get that feeling just watching him on TV, Marty. Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah, but you know what? Honesty is, it comes through even a TV or a song. That's why Dad, I think, was so popular, his music. And because, you know, Dad was, he's human. He wasn't perfect. He wasn't Jesus or nothing like it. But the fact is, whatever your opinion of my dad because of his music is probably pretty close to what he was. He was, like Bill, he's just honest. And everybody tries to figure out what the secret to the great artist and the success. And I think the great artists, the one thing they are, they've mastered how to be honest and be themselves. And people love honesty, and honesty will always sail.
Folks out there, let me tell you about a great way to learn new things and keep up on the topics that interest you most. It's a new app called Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. This is very cool. It works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information, from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down to just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. You say you like to read books from cover to cover? Well, so do I. I use Blinkist to test drive books I think I might be interested in, and then I read the condensed version, and if my interest is piqued, I go and buy it. However, for many books, all I want to do is read the condensed version, and that's great too. So with Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read and listen to their massive library, all the books you want for one low price. And right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer to just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/success and try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist.com/success. In your show, Marty, you talk about, you have a lot of great stories in your show, and that's part of the joy of seeing it, but you also talk about what I thought was a fabulous story, about a night you observed with your father trying to get, I think it was Lefty Frizzell, but I might be wrong, get him to take a song that your father had written that he wanted Lefty to record because Dad knew it was a hit. And it was Lefty, right?
Yes, it was. It was That's the Way Love Goes.
That was the song. Tell a story, Marty. It's a fabulous story.
Well, this was 1972 was the first time Dad and I heard that song together. My dad ended up recording it in 1982-83. But I was 14 years old, but when Dad and I was on the road, like we always were, and all I remember about was me and my dad and Chris Christopherson were sitting in a motel room in Nashville, Tennessee in 1972, and my dad and Chris were sitting around picking on guitars and visiting. They loved each other like brothers, but I was sitting there watching and listening, probably learning, and the phone rang, and Dad answered it, and he talked for a minute, and he hung up. And he said, "Son, you ain't gonna believe who that was." He said, "That was Lefty Frizzell." And Dad knew I loved Lefty Frizzell. I said, "Really?" He said, "Yep." He said, "Lefty has a song he just wrote yesterday, and he wants to play it for me. Do you want to go with me?" I said, "Yeah." So me and my dad and Chris jumped in a car and drove across town Nashville to another motel where Lefty was staying, and we walked in and everybody said their hellos and did a little chit chat. And I sat down by the door, and my dad and Chris walked over and sat on the bed across from where Lefty was. And Lefty grabbed his guitar and he sang "That's the Way Love Goes." And, And he asked my dad, he said, Merle, what do you think about that song? My dad said, Lefty, that's a hit record. And Lefty said, well, Merle, why don't you record it for me? And my dad said, no. He said, Lefty, you need to record that song. He said, that's a hit song for you. And Lefty said, no, I want you to cut it. And my dad said, no. Lefty, he said, you ain't had a hit record in years, Lefty. You need that song. He said, I don't need your song. You do. And they argued back and forth. And pretty soon my dad finally told Lefty, he said, Lefty, I'm not cutting your song, okay? You're going to have to record it. We stood up to leave. And Lefty said, well, Merle, before you leave, will you please take this little tape? It's a recording of me and my guitar with this song. If you change your mind at some point, will you please record this for me? My dad said, we'll take your tape, Lefty, but I'm not recording it. You're going to have to do it. He said, this is a hit for you. And we took that tape. My dad and I and Chris jumped back in the car and drove back to our motel room across town in Nashville. And we got back there, and we had two rooms that were side by side. My dad and Chris went back in the room they were in originally, went back to picking on guitars. But I took that little cassette, and I went next door, and I learned That's the Way Love Goes that night. And I learned it one day after Lefty wrote it. It's the first song that I can remember playing all by myself as a kid growing up. And I don't know, it was every time my dad and I would ever get together around the house picking on the guitar, he'd always ask me to sing that song. He'd say, son, do that old song of Lefty's. I like the way he sang it. And I'd sing him That's the Way Love Goes. And this went on for about 10 or so years. And it was in 1982, I joined Dad's band for a couple of years to play rhythm guitar and sing harmony for him. And one night before a show in 82, he come over to me. He said, son, he said, that old song of Lefty's that you do, he said, I'm thinking about recording it. Now, Lefty had passed away about 3 or 4 years earlier. And he said, Lefty's wife is needing some money, needing some help. He said, maybe if I cut that old song of Lefty's, maybe it'll make her some money. Trying to figure out some ways to help her out. He said, but I can't remember how that song goes. He said, so I need you to show me how you do that. Well, I set him down. I showed him how I do. That's Where Love Goes. He recorded it. It was the number one record for him in 1983. He won the Grammy Award for the best country performance of the year. And I was jokingly tell people, and I was with him when he picked up his Grammy Award for that song. Said he picked up his award for that song. He never even mentioned my name, and I taught it to him. But that's how That's the Way Love Goes come to be.
That's a great story. It's also a great story about your father's loyalty to somebody that, you know, you really appreciate it as well.
He's a good person.
Trying to get
Dad was a good person.
Right?
If somebody needed something, he was just Dad was a very kind person, and somebody in need. He didn't like it. He didn't do it. He didn't have press releases about his acts of kindness, and he didn't want nobody to know. He'd just do the thing. You know, that's what good works are, you know. He didn't put it in a newspaper. If he'd help somebody, he didn't want nobody to know about it. He just wanted to do it, and that's the true mark of a good work.
Yeah, a good person, too, yes. Did you happen, Marty, to see Ken Burns' 16-hour documentary, Country Music, and at all?
I did not. I seen just a small piece of it. I know Ken Burns is like really, really good at what he does, and I don't have to wonder. I know that Ken Burns does quality work. Yeah.
Yeah, I mentioned because he gave your father a front row seat in terms of the interviewing time on this show, and so a tremendous amount of respect in the amount of time he gave him. So if you if you get a chance, I think your heart will be warmed by that. You've done two tribute albums to your father that you recorded, I think, in 2010 and 11. And then you did a tribute show in Branson for 2 years. And you've been touring for, I guess, 6 to 8 years with that tribute show. Talk about your audience reaction and why you keep doing it, Marty. Because by the way, it's a fabulous show. I saw it in Georgetown, Texas.
Thank you. Well, you know what? I had my own career. I have my own music, and I could do nothing but that. I did pretty good all by myself, but I don't know. Good grief, he's my dad, and I'm glad he didn't dig ditches for a living, because then I have to dig a ditch in honor of my dad, and I don't want to do that. But You know, my dad and me, we had a couple things in common. We loved each other, and we loved real music and real country music. And like I said earlier, you know, I'm probably a little biased, but good gosh, you know, my dad's gone now. He's passed on, and he's waiting for me in heaven and all that good stuff. But until I get there, you know, when I sing these songs, it's not just a song for me. I was with him when he wrote and recorded Mama Tried, and I was with him when he wrote and recorded all those songs. And, you know, I remember being in the room when he was writing on some of these songs. And when I sing these songs, it's like looking at a full photo album, you know, it's like a family photo album for me. And, and it brings him back to me. And apparently it does the same thing for the audience, because it's a memory trip for everybody. And, you know, I love my dad, and this music just, you know, it kind of takes the place of him being gone right now. And it fills the void for me. And the reaction of the people to the songs is pretty much the same thing. You know, a lot of those folks grew up with my dad. And dad was a part of a lot of their families. And, you know, they'd get together on the weekends and, you know, have their little family get-togethers and have a record player or whatever playing in the background. It was always... when you liked Merle Haggard, you loved him. There wasn't no in-betweens with that stuff. And, you know, people that come to my show, maybe their mama, their daddy, their grandma, their grandpa, their husband, their wife, or somebody that may have passed on, but dad was a part of their relationship. And I've seen many of people cry over these songs. And all it's doing is just taking them back to a better place in their life when their loved ones were with them. And it brings their loved one back to them like it does my dad to me. And I don't know about anybody else. I can only speak for myself. But when I see people smiling and or crying out of joy, and, you know, the effect of this music on people, you know, I get a real blessing, a real kick out of helping people get in out of the storms of life for a minute and get away from all the chaos and mayhem around us. And, you know, it makes people smile. Music makes you happy. And my dad's music, he's a part of people's lives and their upbringings, and good grief. That's not a small deal. It's a big deal. And, so these shows are as much for me as it is for them, but the audience and myself, we both just take a trip down memory lane together.
Yeah, well, everything you said comports with the feeling I had, and the occasional, you know, not so dry eye as you listen to songs that were part of the fabric, really, of our lives. You know, it's really remarkable. It's a fabulous show, and you do great honor to him, not only by either performance but by your words, Marty. Every year we at Success Made to Last celebrate Father's Day with an interview like this. And it's a time to remember the life lessons our dad taught us. And tell us two of the life lessons that Merle taught you.
Well, you know, it'd be really easy to get choked up trying to bring to the surface the little things that dad taught me. You know, and most of what dad taught me was not what he said as much as he just showed me. He didn't tell me, he showed me. And the one thing I've always wanted to emulate, you know, my dad was a great singer, but, you know, he sings the way he does. I sing the way I do. I don't want to imitate his singing. I can't do that. But there is one thing that my dad was that I do want to try to imitate, and that was his kindness and the way he treated people. And I don't care if it was a janitor at the building he was doing a concert at or the president of the United States, he treated everybody absolutely the same. And nobody would know that about him unless they seen him in every circumstance possible. But I've never seen him treat anybody any better or any worse than each other. And I've always just thought that was so admirable. And, you know, and when I die, I hope that the memory I leave behind me with the people behind me, I want somebody to simply say, well, he was a kind man, and much like my dad. And he showed me how to be kind. You know, and like I said earlier, he wasn't Jesus. He was not perfect in no shape, way, shape, or form any more than I am. But when it comes to the way he treated people, I want to be like that when I grow up.
Well, you know, I saw you do something that your dad would have been real proud of, Merle, after your concert. Apparently you do it after every one. You stayed for about an hour and a half afterwards and talked with everyone who wanted to see you. I know I stood in line for an hour and a half to say hello to you. You were gracious with everyone there, and I kept thinking to myself, wow, that's really remarkable. Well, I now know where that comes from because you just told me.
Well, you know what? The fact is, the truth is, every human being is priceless. And, you know, I've never wanted to be treated as if I wasn't worth, as if I was worthless. And, you know, I don't understand the artists out there that don't do what I do. And that's because all they're doing is cheating themselves. You know, those people that want a lot, if they're willing to line up for as long as they're willing to line up, to come by and simply shake your hand, hug your neck, say a couple words of kindness and, you know, and share themselves with you. Why in the world wouldn't you want to do that? I have yet to find, I've never ever gotten tired of being told somebody loved me. And, I love love. And, you know, everybody that comes through a line with me is the only person in that line to me. And, you know, it's not hard. It's not manufactured. It's not phony. I just personally find everybody priceless, and I want them to know how much I appreciate them. And all they're wanting to do is tell me they love me. Good grief. You ain't got enough time for that, then you're an idiot.
Marty, you've been off the road since the Wuhan virus began. Do you have any idea when you'll be back on the road, or is that just a dumb question?
Personal opinion, I think after the election in November, I think this thing's going to just miraculously disappear. That's what I think. And y'all can take that any way you want to.
No, you're talking to someone who kind of agrees with you. I think, yes, indeed, that's probably true. Well, I'll keep an eye on your website because I'd love to see you again. Are you only... I guess the dates that have been canceled, they were not only in Texas and Oklahoma, but you're still traveling around most of the country, right?
A lot of it. I'm not driving too far. I'm getting too old for that. Or not too old. I'm just, you know, it just hurts my body driving up and down the road too much. But America is a big place. Yeah. But you know, I tell you what I am doing that your listeners and or yourself maybe might be interested. Because of the coronavirus thing and all the dead time we've got on our hands to keep myself busy, I started a podcast show. And Yes, this week right here, I think yesterday was the first release date of my very first podcast show, which is basically a once a week show. It's kind of an abbreviated version of what I do live. And just... you know, people submit questions and request for songs, and I tell stories, and it's something that it's brand new, and it hadn't developed into nothing big yet or anything. Maybe I don't know if it will, but I do have a podcast show. You can check it out at MartyHaggard.com, and it's a subscription thing. And you know, I'd been wanting to try that for a while, but we'd been so busy on the road, I never really had time to get into it. But since we got all this time on our hands, Tessa and I, my wife and I, we started it, and I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to people getting involved where they submit their questions and their requests, because like I said earlier, I've got such a long relationship with country music entertainers and my dad, of course, and so anyway, it's gonna be like what I do live, except people have more involvement in it. They're able to ask for the certain songs and ask certain questions, and I'll deal. The show will be basically the content of that show will be determined by the people.
Well, that sounds fabulous, Marty. I didn't see that on the site. I must have glanced over it, but I will definitely check that out. Okay. Well, I mean, the last time I looked at the site was a week ago when I was doing the preparation, so I may have missed it.
I don't think we had it up last week.
That's why I didn't see it then. Okay, I will look again right after I get up the phone.
Okay.
And everybody, if you want to go see that, that's at MartyHaggard.com. And there's also Marty's schedule when it, you know, gets realigned after the election. Marty, this is really a pleasure and an honor. I promised my father, who's 93 years old, that when I got the when we posted this, that I would let him know so he can listen to it. And we're going to post it on Sunday,
cool.
Marty, so that we can use it as a Father's Day gift. And I want to wish you all the best. Really do. Seem like a great guy, and yeah. Certainly we're delightful to meet at Georgetown. Very gracious to me, and I hope to see you on the road again sometime.
Oh, we're going to get out there, brother. You know, barring me dying, if I don't die between now and November, I'm pretty sure that I will be out there because believe it or not, I actually have come to need the people as much as anything. People just give me a reason to live. I mean. Like I said earlier, you can't get enough love in this world that we're in right now, and I miss the people more than I do the music right now.
Well, that's wonderful. Listen, I will see you again somewhere here in the great state of Texas, and let me sign off to everybody out there. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, folks. Remember to go to successmadetolast.com to register for our newsletter. Filled with fun information about our future guests and great stuff in general and some of my own musings. A couple of weeks ago, I had a newsletter about my old grandmother and back in Oklahoma, and a lot of people wrote to me and said they got a kick out of it. You can go to your podcast distributor, that'd be iTunes or Google Play or Spreaker, and rate our show, please. Until the next time, go out there and live the best version of you. And Marty, thank you once again.
My pleasure, my friend. Thank you. And left his living in a cheap hotel. That is quiet, Cleveland's cold.